sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed from the phone you are using. Please read the instruction card and dial again. Thank you.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Barely within reach.
And in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do. Good evening.
Best Canada Day ever. That's all I'm going to say. But now we're back in America, and we have business to take care of and all kinds of fun things to talk about. You know, last week I brought up the ice tracker I have on my phone. It's put out by these people called Islip Forward, Long Island Ice Tracker. And I don't know what it is, but it's exploded over the last few days. I think ice is as active as ever, but I think there are more people looking for ice now. Today, for instance, I saw a number of reports from Bayshore, New York, Uniondale, New York. They say that they were conducting a traffic stop. Now, ice does not have the authority to do that, to stop all cars and demand to see your papers. So do not comply if anybody in camouflage and a mask approaches your car. You know, if you see that, I would speed away, because it sounds to me like you're about to be carjacked. We are living in a crazy time where people seem to think they can get away with anything just because they have the mobster in charge of the country telling them it's okay. It's not. And, you know, something else really fascinating has happened, too. There's another app. I imagine there are a lot of apps, but this one has started getting attention as of the last day or so. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but this particular app is called Ice Block, and it has more than 20,000 users. I expect it's going to have a lot more than that soon. It seems to be focused on Los Angeles, mostly, which is certainly needed at this point. And it's put out by this guy named Joshua Aaron, and he's been getting a lot of media attention in the last couple of days. In fact, I understand Christy Noem even shouted him out. No? Just shouted? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I had that wrong. All right. Well, according to the CNN story, yes, that's right, CNN, he has worked in and around the tech industry for around 2 decades. Okay, so we must know him, right? We know everybody in the tech industry. He built his first app, a blackjack game. Now I know we know him, at computer camp when he was 13 years old. And that must have been a fun computer camp. His newest app is designed for a very different purpose, to let users alert people nearby to sightings of immigration and custom enforcement agents in their area. Now, Aaron launched the platform called IceBlock way back in early April after watching Trump's administration begin its immigration crackdown. Now, as you know, the White House's immigration policies have sparked mass protests across the United States. And, you know, something about those protests that took place fairly recently that got millions of people out into the street. Did you notice how many American flags there were? A lot. And this is something that I've been saying for many, many years, is that when you demonstrate about something, unless you actually want to dismantle the country or break away from it or something like that, wave the flag, because it doesn't belong to the people that are trying to destroy the country. It belongs to all of us. And I think somebody got the message, because that was a theme throughout. No matter where you looked at demonstrations, the No Kings demonstrations back in June, you saw flags. And I think that's how you win people over. That's how you get more people to realize that you're not a bunch of lunatics, that you're actually speaking sense, and that maybe I should listen to more things that you say. Anyway, IceBlock currently has more than 20,000 users, as mentioned. Now, Aaron said, when I saw what was happening in this country, I wanted to do something to fight back. He said the deportation efforts to him were reminiscent of Nazi Germany. We're literally watching history repeat itself. Now, IceBlock is designed to be an early warning system for users when ICE is operating nearby. Aaron said users can add a pin on a map showing where they spotted agents, along with optional notes like what officers were wearing, what kind of car they were driving. Other users within a 5-mile radius will then receive a push alert notifying them of the sighting. Now, he said he hopes these notifications will help people avoid interactions with ICE, noting that he does not want users to interfere with the agency's operations, and neither do we. We don't want people to get hurt, get in trouble, anything like that. Just be aware. The app provides a similar warning when users log a sighting. Please note that the use of this app is for information and notification purposes only. It is not to be used for the purposes of inciting violence or interfering with law enforcement. Now, ICE did not respond to CNN's request for comment. You know, I don't know. Try this. Go out, look at YouTube, where they post a lot of news clips, or any local TV station. They will always try to contact ICE about something that happened, about raids or about crackdowns or intimidation tactics or anything like that. And literally 100% of the stories I've seen, I must have seen a couple of hundred stories, they have said, we tried to contact ICE and they did not respond. They never respond. It's like this this scary monolithic force of masked, I don't even know if they're human. Well, you know, you don't really, because you never see their faces. You never see their faces. You don't know their names. You know nothing about them. But they're out there grabbing people, throwing them into unmarked vans, and disappearing them in this country right now. So, yeah, they never respond. They never comment. They're just there. And then they're gone. Now, they do release press statements. And on Monday, ICE acting director Todd Lyons released a statement criticizing the report I just read and saying that IceBlock basically paints a target on federal law enforcement officers' backs, and that officers and agents are already facing a 500% increase in assaults. Haven't seen any. Haven't heard of any. Seen a lot of assaults of individuals walking down the street, going to work, coming home from work, going to school, coming home from school, trying to take care of their kids. You know, the criminals that Trump was talking about, all those people that we need to be sheltered from. I've seen a lot of assaults on them. I've seen a lot of assaults on all of us, because we all have to deal with the consequences in one way or another, whether it's our favorite restaurant closing, whether it's a fear of having masked men running down the street grabbing people, whether it's a fear for a friend, a neighbor, family member losing everything because of where they came from. We all have to deal with that. Now, something else that I find to be an annoyance is that this app is only available on iOS. And the reason for that is its developer says the app would have to collect information that could ultimately put users at risk to provide the same experience on Android. Really? No one's figured out a way to keep that from happening? Android? You know, developed by Google, supposedly the people that have privacy in mind, and Apple maybe didn't. Well, things certainly have changed, haven't they? Reassuring users of those privacy protections will likely be key to growing IceBlock's user base, given how the government is building a database to aid in its deportation efforts. We're going to get to databases in a minute. We don't want anybody's device ID, IP address, location, said Aaron. We don't want anything being discoverable. And so this is 100% anonymous and free for anyone who wants to use it. If we don't know this guy, shame on us. I mean, this is just so awesome and amazing and, dare I say, patriotic. Although IceBlock has no surefire way of guaranteeing the accuracy of user reports, Aaron says he's built safeguards to prevent users from spamming the platform with fake sightings. That is a real concern. Users can only report a sighting within 5 miles of their location, and they can only report once every 5 minutes. Reports are automatically deleted after 4 hours. He says he has no plans to monetize the free app, but rather wants it to be a service to the community. Now, his work on IceBlock stands in contrast to the support that some leaders in Silicon Valley have shown to Trump, including donating to and attending his inauguration. Some companies have also announced investments in expanding their U.S. presence following the president's push for domestic tech manufacturing. Aaron said, I think I would say grow a backbone. You can't just be about the money. I understand that you have shareholders to report to. I understand that you have employees that need their paychecks. But at what point do you say enough is enough? Well, that is admirable. That is amazing. That is so inspirational. And I hope it's only the beginning. And I really hope we know this guy because, boy, he sounds cool. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah. Not too long ago, we were talking about what we in the hacker community could be doing to make things better in the current situations that we're all facing and that we're all afraid of. And I think this is a shining example of that. I do think that if this developer does not want to make a version for Android, there is someone out there who can. There is someone out there who should. There are countless people out there who could collaborate on something like this that is open source, that could be cross-platform. I want to see more work along these lines. You know, we never want to hang all our hopes on just one thing that, you know, one person is behind, because that is not fair to the users. That's not fair to the developer. I want to see just more things like this out there. And I want there to be so many out there that if one gets knocked off an app store or otherwise deactivated, there are others to take its place.
Go ahead, Alex.
I second what Rob is saying. I think this is such a great example of what the hacker community can do in terms of bringing people together, sharing data, sharing information, sharing intelligence amongst the community. It's really extraordinary. I'm really wondering what the hell's going on with Android, though. I mean, there's like an Erector set of privacy enhancing technologies out there that should be able to shield this data in some way that to protect people. And I feel like we're leaving out a very vulnerable slice of the population there that utilizes Android. It's not everybody that can afford a brand new iPhone or even an old iPhone. So Androids, I think, are really quite popular in the immigrant community. So I think I think somebody should get to work on this. I'm really not entirely sure what the problem is. But one other thing I want to say, Emmanuel, I applaud your sentiment of taking back the flag here from the right, who had just tried to usurp it. And to go back to that point, I mean, for many, many years, I have always flown a flag at my home, wherever I am, whether it's in Vermont, D.C., Pennsylvania, New York, it doesn't matter. And I've even had people come over to me that were visiting from D.C. and say, you know, why do you have the flag up? And I said, what do you mean, why do I have the flag up? Well, aren't you afraid people are going to think you're a Republican? I said, absolutely not. I said, you know, if you give up the flag, the battle is over. Then it's lost. You know, the flag belongs to all of us, and I think we all need to fly it. I totally applaud that effort.
And those people who desecrate it by, like, painting it blue, whatever that's all about, I don't know. I question their patriotism. But anyway, yes, Gila, go ahead.
So I've just been doing a little bit of searching to see anything. Apparently, Joshua Aaron was doxxed hard on X, excuse me, on Twitter last week. He said this morning, the hardcore right wing on Twitter, decided to dox my home address, full legal name, and incite hate and violence toward me and my family. The comments are filled with hate and anti-Semitism. And since there seems to be no way to accurately report something like this, like, it's bad. And I did see something else go by on a Facebook post that I didn't click on because I didn't want it to bork my algorithm, but was like, there's this app that's letting illegals evade ISIS and big tech is behind it. And I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. I'm glad people are running scared. I really am. The right people are running scared.
If we can get them to blame big tech, maybe that's not such a bad thing for him. You know,
that's
maybe,
what I'm saying. Yeah.
Maybe we can screw up the algorithm enough so that he's protected, because that is insane what I'm hearing, and just very, very upsetting. And I understand that Kristi Noem, basically, she weighed in on this, issued a statement on Twitter, basically saying, "This sure looks like obstruction of justice. Our brave ICE law enforcement face a 500% increase," we mentioned that, "in assaults against them. If you obstruct or assault our law enforcement, we will hunt you down and you will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law." When you say something like "we will hunt you down," you know, what does that call to mind? It calls to mind jackbooted thugs executing people. That's what I get out of that. Hunting you down. This is disgusting. These people really, really need to start facing justice for the crap they are putting our country through. I mean, I'm tired just sitting back and saying, oh, how bad is it going to get today? You know, and just kind of watching all the pundits saying, boy, this is unprecedented. Where will it go next? It's time that we step up and start doing something about it, because this is not, I don't think, the America anybody wanted, even on election day, regardless of what direction they went in. It's damn scary. Go ahead. Who is first? Alex, you, then Rob.
Sure. I mean, look, speaking of ICE here, I think we should also bear the history of how ICE was created in mind. And it was created shortly after 9/11. You know, this was one of these sort of Department of Homeland Security 9/11 creations and incantations of authority that were going to be used, you know, to target things like terrorism. And for a long time, ICE was not known throughout the nation and the world to be a bunch of jackbooted thugs, you know, running around with masks on, hiding outside courtrooms and snatching people up after their hearings. I mean, it is totally insane. I mean, during the Obama administration, the focus with ICE really was for terrorism and very serious criminals. It wasn't going after anybody who was an undocumented person. But then, of course, Trump changed that. And he changed that, I think, primarily through executive orders and policy changes. And they focused really just much more on broader immigration enforcement and increasing these raids. And now it is just ramped up to the nth extent. I think Biden tried to reel it back in, but for whatever reason, wasn't entirely successful in reeling in the authority of ICE. I mean, they got used to having this authority and wielding this power during the Trump administration. And so it persisted. And now ICE not only has the support of its own agency in DHS and others, but they're working with more closely with local law enforcement. They're working with other federal agencies. They're going to have access to much more data. This is becoming an extraordinarily scary department. And I think to bring this back, because everybody criticizes us about talking too much about politics, I guess, this is like the classic definition of function creep here. You start off in one way, and it changes ever so slightly over the last 22 years. I mean, ICE was created in 2003. Over the last 22 years, this is a totally different agency than when it started.
Go ahead, Rob.
I've got nothing. I think Alex very succinctly put what I was going to say.
Feel good about that, Alex? You took the words right out of Rob's mouth. All right.
Yeah, well, I imagine he would have been more succinct, though. Yeah.
Well, you can argue about succinctness later. Let's go on to ICE acting director Todd Lyons again, who basically has now turned their sights onto CNN, onto the media. CNN's promotion of an ICE spotting app is reckless and irresponsible. Advertising an app that, yeah, by reporting it, you're advertising it. Advertising an app that basically paints a target on federal law enforcement officers' backs is sickening. Are you ready for the line? Does anybody want to predict the line, the next line? No? Go ahead.
We need to put them down. It's obstruction.
No.
It's a crime.
I'll give you a hint. Terrorism. It's something very specific. A specific number.
No? 42.
Oh my God, you got to pay attention. Kyle?
500.
You got it. 500%. Yes. This is this fiction that they're pushing. You know, 500% compared to what? My officers and agents are already facing a 500% increase in assaults, and going on live television to announce an app that lets anyone zero in on their locations is like inviting violence against them with a national megaphone. Okay, Todd, first of all, the way the app works, you might not be familiar. It happens after you guys have already made your presence known, all right? So basically, when people are saying, hey, there are ICE agents here, they're talking about something that has already happened, not something that's about to happen. Would I like to have an app that tells where your goons are going to be in the next 24 hours? Yes, I would love that very much. But unfortunately, we live in a world where that does not yet exist. And I sure hope it does someday. But right now, we have this app that will tell us when you are terrorizing people and spreading the word. And I don't see a damn thing wrong with that. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me continue with what he has to say. CNN is willfully endangering the lives of officers who put their lives on the line every day and enabling dangerous criminal aliens to evade U.S. law. Really? Dangerous criminal aliens? Have you seen the people that are being swept up here? These are people who have jobs washing dishes 20 hours or what, 12 hours a day? Yeah, ridiculous amount. These are mothers picking up their children in schools. These are innocent people who have not done anything except overstay their visas, or they are in the process of getting sanctuary in this country, and that process is being aborted by these thugs who are basically throwing them into a prison. Or sending them to a foreign country where we don't even know where they are. That is the craziest thing. He finishes his remarks by saying, is this simply reckless journalism or overt activism? They are targeting anyone who even discusses this right now or basically spreads the word in any possible way. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, if they want to claim that this is putting their agents in danger and, you know, people are attacking their agents and all this sort of thing, why aren't they showing us? Because we know they love showing us them doing what they think is their job well done. They love putting out their, you know, statements and pictures and everything about how badass and wonderful they are. Where's the video of them being attacked? Because, you know, I think that if they had that, they would be spreading that everywhere.
I haven't seen a single video of ICE agents being... I've seen ICE agents pushing people, and I suppose when you push somebody, you don't get to move forward as fast as you would if there was nobody there. So I guess, you know, if you consider that an attack, the presence of somebody, that's all I can see. I mean, you would think there would be video out there. And 500% increase. I don't even know how to interpret that. That's based on what? They give you nothing. Alex, go ahead.
Well, as regards the 500% increase in violence against ICE agents, I would just like to remind our listeners that studies have shown that 73% of all statistics are made up on the spot.
How long have you been holding that one in, Alex?
A while. Right. Thanks for asking that.
Again,
good to get it out.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, it's great that that this app is out there, and kudos to Joshua Aaron for writing it. And you know what? The way we can protect him from the idiots who are targeting him now is for there to be 1,000 apps. So if you have the ability to write an app that can simply report when ICE agents are in the area, when basically, you know, the app doesn't do that. The person controlling the app does that. They say, hey, I just saw somebody. And this is basically it's sending out information. If you can write an app like that, please do so. And label it with the city that you're in or the state that you're in. And we'll have a whole lot of these things out there, and one person won't have to take the heat for all of it from the would-be fascist out there. Now, we talked about databases, and you might be surprised to know that the so-called liberty-loving administration that we have currently in power is compiling a huge database with your name in it. That's right. They have merged immigration data with Social Security information to create a massive index. And the whole reason for that is to stop. Who wants to guess? Okay, this is good. Rob, do you have your hand up? No, you don't.
Oh.
Alex, you do.
Oh, I know. It's got to be voter fraud.
I hope you didn't read the story, Alex, because I would have said basically immigration fraud. I would have said Social Security fraud. But this is like
This is it. It's got to be right. It's got to be voter fraud.
Merging immigration data with Social Security data to combat voter fraud. Okay, whatever. But whatever you have to use to justify it. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has, for the first time, built a national citizenship database that combines information from immigration agencies and the Social Security Administration. Never done that before. And if we had known they were going to be doing that, I'm sure most of us would have said, hell no. The database was created in collaboration with the Department of... Anyone? Yes, Alex.
Would it be Homeland Security?
No, you're wrong. Go ahead, Kyle.
Government efficiency?
You're right, yes. Oh. That's two for you, Kyle. Department of Government Efficiency, yeah. DOGE. Remember those guys? You know, it's funny how Trump is now saying he's going to sic DOGE on Elon Musk because Elon Musk criticized him. Can you believe that? This is so perfect. DOGE is going to turn on Elon Musk.
Woof.
Oh, you can't write this. They're basically, this is an effort to bridge the gaps between disparate information sources to make it easier to determine whether someone is a citizen, according to NPR, which first reported the details of this database. Now, it's the result of an expansion of the Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements program. And that somehow spells the word SAVE. Did you know that? Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements. Well, they're so clever. That's made up of smaller databases within the Homeland Security Department and an integration with information from the Social Security Administration. The centralized repository is searchable and can be accessed by state and local election officials to look up the names of anyone trying to vote to determine if they are citizens. Until now, election officials had to ask potential voters for documents verifying their citizenship, or rely on a hard-to-navigate patchwork of databases. Yeah, I wonder how many people they've actually caught using this. Voter fraud is rare in the U.S., experts say, and consequences include fines or jail time. And lately, the majority of people committing it turn out to be Republicans, oddly enough, trying to get more votes for Trump. Yeah, previously, agencies involved in voting were required to use numbers issued by the DHS to look up voter registrations, which they may not have had access to, but may have been more likely to possess Social Security numbers. So, this makes it all very, very easy. But not only for voter fraud investigations, for all kinds of things. The citizenship database is one of the first results of DOGE's efforts to gain access to and merge information on Americans from agencies across the federal government, including the IRS. Reports indicate DOGE is attempting to create a single data hub that enables access to these vast troves of information on Americans in an effort to eliminate the separation of information in isolated or protected silos. We used to think of these isolated and protected silos as security for our privacy. You know, that used to be a thing that we cared about. Now it's the threat. In response, union members in Maryland have sued the Office of Personnel Management, the Treasury Department, and the Education Department, what's left of it, for sharing personal information with DOGE officials who had no need to know the vast amount of sensitive personal information to which they were granted access. Defendants admit that the Social Security Administration granted DOGE personnel broad access to millions of Americans' sensitive PII, that's personally identifiable information. U.S. District Judge Ellen Lipton Hollander of Maryland wrote in a decision ordering a temporary block on the Social Security Administration sharing information with DOGE, "This intrusion into the personal affairs of millions of Americans, absent an adequate explanation for the need to do so, is not in the public interest." Well, thank God for judges that step up and say, "This is not right. This has to be stopped in its tracks." That is something about this system that I am proud to say is a valuable foundation You know, it's a check of balance, checks and balances, you know, a check of power that, you know, Trump can just issue a statement. And at least, you know, if there's a judge that has some common sense, he can put an end to this. But, Alex, I'm going to ask you this now. In the last week, the Supreme Court has basically weighed in on that and said something to the effect of, yeah, judges can't do that anymore. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it was that was a bizarre decision to my mind when I read it, because it basically said, as I understood it, and candidly, I didn't read the actual opinion from the Supreme Court. I read a lot of reporting on it, though, and it all seemed to circle on the fact that judges have to, the effect of a judicial ruling will only be with respect to the individual facts and circumstances of that case, or the limits of judicial power are very localized in many ways on the basis of this decision, and that judges shouldn't make these wider pronouncements, which is exactly what they are there to do. I mean, they are there to address federal questions that arise under federal law. The federal courts are designed specifically to hear issues of constitutional import. State courts can't do that. State courts are not competent to interpret, let's say, you know, the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. That's why we have the federal court system and federal judges who specialize in this type of thing and ensure that the state doesn't encroach on those rights that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights. And so to limit judicial power like this is really disheartening in many, many ways, because it seems like it's an obvious, like the decision had an obvious political slant to it as well. But Emmanuel, in as much as I think you are applauding the federal judiciary here and standing up to Trump, I think it's important to note not only has the federal judiciary been considered to be the bulwark of this republic and has stood up against tyranny time and time again in this country, you know, think back to, you know, the Korematsu decision with Japanese internment camps. We've had a lot of stains, notable stains on the human rights tapestry in this country. And the federal judges have stepped in to right those wrongs. Think about, you know, the Supreme Court during the civil rights era as well. It's kind of extraordinary. But they're under threat now, too. And Trump has been targeting them and intimidating judges and threatening them with impeachment, threatening to release information about judges. And this is another form of trying to centralize power in the executive branch. And this is a really interesting system when we think about how the Constitution was designed in the 18th century. It was really a form of what we would consider to be today decentralization. And Trump is like this rogue system administrator trying to centralize power in himself time and time again by breaking these systems that were designed to prevent that power from being centralized.
That's a good analogy. And you use the word bulwark, which is the word I was searching for, and I've never used it successfully in a sentence, but one day.
There you go.
Think about ways that, you know, we have dealt with system administrators in the past, rogue system administrators that have kind of lost their minds and gone power crazy. How we dealt with them and figure out a way to translate that into what's going on now. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, talking about the sheer overreach of this, and it's important to note that and remind folks that DOGE calls itself the Department of Government Efficiency. It is not a department of the United States government. It was not established by any of the congressional means that are supposed to be there to establish something like this. DOGE is an initiative of the administration. It is an office at the White House. It reports directly to Trump. So when we say that DOGE now has this massive centralized database on every single American, Trump has this massive database of every single American. It is Trump. It is an arm of Trump. And, you know, whatever jokiness there ever was in his name is no longer in Doge's name is no longer funny, because it is overreach. That is the purpose and the sole function of this organization.
And I should point out that this particular database was created with little engagement of the public, something that is requisite for building these types of mass surveillance databases. The Privacy Act of 1974 requires federal agencies to notify the public if there are new ways they plan to use or collect Americans' personal information. Legal experts have also questioned whether this sort of a centralized database sidesteps many of the privacy and security protections implemented within each agency. The consolidation of personal information into a mass database is unprecedented and has sparked concern among immigration and privacy advocates. The creation of a centralized repository brings together pieces of information that were previously within the purview of separate agencies and potentially makes it easier for government officials to look up individuals' data from across the government. And many of us are worried about how else that database could be used. And I think that's the key right there. You know, you may say this is to combat voter fraud or to find people who are in the country illegally or to uncover Social Security fraud. But what we're not looking at is all of the ways that this can be misused and will be misused, because there has never been an instance where something like this has been implemented and has not been misused. So the question is, are you comfortable as an American having your data in this massive database where you can be targeted on the whim of a bureaucrat or a politician or somebody potentially much, much scarier? Were you consulted about this? Did you know this was going to happen? Well, it's happening right now. And we voted for it as a nation. We voted for this. So time to rethink that. Yes, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, the public input here, I think, is a really important point that you bring up here, because the Privacy Act, you know, passed way back in the mid-70s, I believe, requires some kind of public notification and comment period for this type of data to be aggregated in these ways. And so there's this complete and utter failure to consult the public or to comply with federal law on how these things would be created, which would make it vulnerable to attack legally as well. So I think it's quite likely that unless they draw the wrong judge, which is quite possible these days, I think an injunction will issue against the creation or the utilization of this national database and sometime very soon, I'm pretty sure.
Right, but do you think that what that judge says is going to be allowed to stand? Remember, judges have been stripped of their power by the Supreme Court, basically.
Yeah, well, the government would appeal, you know, but this would have effect, you know, on the federal government. I don't think that Supreme Court decision that recently issued should affect this particular case, because the object would be the database. The exact object of the case would be the database, so the judge would clearly have authority to rule on it, I would hope. But it is, it is very, very concerning, and I think there's a lot of other reasons here, too. I mean, it's arguably a Fifth Amendment violation. It arguably could violate due process concerns as well, because this national database is going to have undoubtedly information associated with your citizenship and its status. And if that's changed on a citizen without any notice or opportunity to be heard with respect to that status change, which is then relied on by other federal agencies to detain you, deport you, treat you in certain manners, offer you certain entitlements, benefits, et cetera, then there's going to be an effect here. So I think there's very, very clear due process concerns. And then the discriminatory use of this is really quite possible. And there's just no oversight. So, I mean, there's a litany of issues here that remain unresolved and I think make it vulnerable to attack.
Well, a couple of things here. First of all, I think we're all putting way too much faith in the Supreme Court, because in a single vote, they can just say, yeah, this is fine, move on, and it's over. And right now, the way that Trump has set it up, they may do just that. It doesn't matter if it's by one vote or by three votes. They can just make it okay. And then the other thing that I don't think we're really considering here is that even if they say this thing is an outrage and must be stopped, isn't it already put together? Didn't they already combine this data? And we might say, you're not supposed to use this, but do we really believe that they're going to listen to that?
And do we really believe that they're going to secure it as well? Anytime the government historically has centralized massive amounts of sensitive personal information, it really hasn't gone all that well, has it? I mean, a perfect example of this is to look back at the Office of Personnel Management breach of all the SF-86 information for employees, that the SF-86 forms national security questionnaire that anybody who holds a security clearance or applies for a security clearance has to fill out. Contains massive amounts of highly personal information like your criminal history, your drug usage, psychological information, medical information. Oops, pardon the beagle.
Your dog is right, Alec. Your dog is absolutely right to be concerned.
Ah, that's exactly right. Well, she's getting all worked up about this. I mean, you know beagles, right? So that we're talking about the OPM breach. So that was breached ostensibly by China, and all of that data, all of that information about anybody who has held or does hold a security clearance at that time has fallen into the hands of a foreign adversary. So now we want to centralize even more sensitive citizen-related information.
Alex, I got to say, I'm not so worried about the foreign adversaries anymore. I'm worried about the adversaries right here.
The domestic ones,
because, yeah, they have proven themselves to be completely untrustworthy and evil. And how much are we going to just sit back and say, well, how evil can they possibly get? Hey, yeah. You're listening to Off the Hook here on WBAI in New York. And I want to urge people to support this radio station where we are not afraid to speak our minds and to have you do the same whenever the opportunity arises. Please support the radio station. Go to buddy.wbai.org, pledge a monthly amount that will help keep this place on the air for the indefinite future. And boy, do we need a voice like this in this particular city right now and in the country. So please help us out in whatever way you can. Please spread the word. If you know any exceedingly wealthy people, by all means, contact them and ask them to send a pledge our way. It's how we've stayed on the air since 1960, older than any radio station in New York City, I believe. And if there's another radio station in New York City that has survived a single format, and our format is variety of viewpoints, I'd like to hear from them. I'd like to know about that station. But WBAI, as far as I'm concerned, has been around the longest. And that says something. That says something about the need for a place like this. That says something about the value that New Yorkers hold dear. And you don't have to be from New York, though, to support WBAI, because we now reach the entire world through WBAI.org. You can stream us anytime. Off the Hook has been on the air since 1988, and we've talked about all forms of technology. We've seen the world of technology change and evolve. We have so much documented as far as the way phones used to sound, the rings and busy signals, and not only that, but the way society has changed, the way that we deal with things, the things that we take for granted now, and the things that we warned about in the past that are now mainstream, or the things that we warned about in the past that are now threatening us, about to happen. So, keeping all kinds of different voices on the air, and of course, we all don't agree with each other. We have all kinds of different ideas. It is so important. It is so vital. It is so such a major part of democracy that pledging to WBAI, and I don't mean a bit of irony in saying this, pledging to WBAI is about the most patriotic thing you can do. Buddy.wbai.org. You guys have any other contact info, phone numbers, the like? I never have that in front of me. No? Okay. Well, if you find it, please bring it forward. Kyle, did you have something?
Well, give to WBAI.org is also a fantastic place to make a contribution. But I was going back to our topic. I thought...
Well, let's go back to the topic in a second. I think Gila has...
what are those?
I do indeed. I have the phone number, which is 1-833-922-4692. And for those who are paying attention, that does in fact spell out 833-WBAINYC. Those letters get a little squished together. Yeah, 833-WBAINYC. That's 922-4692. And you can make your gift there. But again, a plug for buddy.wbai.org, a reliable stream of income is the best thing you can do for a nonprofit organization. And then again, the more you give, the less we have to ask you for.
Okay. And Kyle, go ahead.
I just wanted to add on something that was said basically about the size of this particular organized database of people's information. It's as compared to previous attacks or basically stolen data, that amassed like government employees, a lot of that stuff can be compared now with a lot of analytical tools, and the more organized it is, the larger vulnerability you risk if it gets into the hands of a multitude into a marketplace or is something used by a wide range of people. And I think we were kind of talking about the future, and we were also sort of insinuating that this is something we should affect, but you have to almost act now as though this stuff is already going to be circulated because it's already been organized. They're no matter how well they think they might control it, it's going to become a desirable product of information, and ultimately it will affect the people that are using it in whatever ways, you know, nefarious or otherwise, or for political gain, let's say, that it will invariably be repurposed and used against them if it's a comprehensive source of data. So it may be a part of facial recognition or some app that ICE agents are using today, but it could be a part of a very different set of tools tomorrow.
Absolutely. I mean, we don't know. The space kittens of Alpha Centauri might have already downloaded it, you know, and it's out there now. What are you going to do? How are you going to stop that? The data is out, you know? They're not real. Are they? No, they're not real. They're not real.
We'll check. But
you raise a good point, because think about, we were talking in recent weeks about Real ID, you know, about everybody being forced or encouraged strongly to upgrade their driver's licenses or to get a passport card or whatnot, and become a part of a standardized a form of identification. Now, if all those databases are connected, as is the goal, well, that's a backup to this database. And all of a sudden you have all this information out there, and you have a way of checking it. It's really frightening.
Well, and for years, if you want to talk about what has been said in the past, for years we've talked about how private companies are amassing databases for marketing and other purposes. A lot of the ad surveillance capitalism stuff that's all been widely documented and is itself a precursor to these conditions and the way that this stuff can be used and combined in the ways you're suggesting.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but I just wanted to make sure that we didn't ignore this story. And that's something we were afraid of. We've been afraid of for quite some time, ever since Trump decided he was going to sue 60 Minutes and CBS and Paramount for the edits on an interview with Kamala Harris that he didn't like. Doesn't seem to understand that things get edited, and that's the way you do interviews. In fact, the unedited transcript was released, and that pretty much backed that up. There wasn't any evidence of changing or giving her preferential treatment or any of that. But in that particular case, well, guess what? The courageous bosses up on high in Paramount decided they were going to settle and give Trump $16 million. Yeah, this is insane. Journalists today were infuriated, and at least one senator wants to investigate whether bribery laws were broken. Company just wants him to go away. But you know what? When you pay off somebody like that, he doesn't go away. He comes back time and time again. And I guess Paramount is going to find that out. Now, Paramount, of course, being the owners of CBS, they say the money will go to Trump's future presidential library and to pay his legal fees. Yeah, because that's what he needs. They say they're not apologizing or expressing regret about the story. Yeah, you are. You are. Whenever you you write a check for $16 million, you're kind of conceding something. Yeah. Trump's lawyers claimed he suffered mental anguish following the 60 Minutes interview. I don't think that's the cause. I don't think that's it. And he originally sued for $20 billion. So I guess, all right, this must be, and Alex, maybe you can back me up here. This is a legal hint here that we're providing on Off the Hook. If you want to sue somebody, sue them for an amount of money that is so crazy that they will settle for an amount that's less crazy, but in the eyes of us commoners, still pretty damn crazy. So, okay, he didn't get $20 billion. He got $16 million. I don't feel any better. I really don't. Alex, go ahead. Closing words.
Yeah, I mean, these in these types of lawsuits, plaintiffs always seek really, really outrageous sums of money up first, but then the actual damages are a tiny fraction of that generally. But this is really a terrible precedent that happened here with 60 Minutes. And, you know, to settle in this way really is disappointing, because if you think about media organizations, they're so vulnerable to legal threats already. They're so vulnerable to political pressure. Now this increases the likelihood of political interference in journalism by exerting abusive process in the legal system. I mean, it's chipping away again at one of these decentralized forms of governance.
It's a guarantee that is what's going to happen. And after the show, remind me to send a funeral bouquet over to 60 Minutes on the death of journalism. Thank you very much. Okay, we are out of here. Off the Hook. We'll be back next week, 7 p.m. on WBAI. Write to us, oth@2600.com. And you can tune in on YouTube on channel 2600 at 8 o'clock. We'll be on 8 o'clock. We'll even be taking phone calls. So hopefully we will see you there. Good night.
Took on many shapes, the bear, the elk, the antelope, the elephant, the deer, the mineral, the iron, the copper, the colt, and the rubber, the coffee, the cotton, the sugar, the people, the people, the people, the germ traveled faster than the bullet, they harvest the mountainside, protect the crops, herd the cattle, the people, the people, the people, the people, the people, the women and children were separated from the men. They're divided us according to the regional filters of their minds. The violence of arrogance crawls into the air, nestles into the geospatial cortex. We are not a conquered people.
Awesome.